Hello and welcome to Dungeon Crawlers Anonymous, a podcast about adventure games, RPG hybrids, and of course, dungeon crawlers. This is episode 002, and today's crawl includes a look forward at some upcoming games in 2015. We'll talk about campaigns and adventure games, and finally, we'll dig into the gaming backlog and take a look at D&D Castle Ravenloft. All that and more awaits you in today's encounter deck. I'm Ron Reinhardt.
And I'm Chuck Angelini.
And welcome to the dungeon. Hi, my name is Ron, and I'm addicted to dungeon crawlers.
Hi, Ron.
Ron?
So before we get started, I wanted to share a story about a game called Arcadia Quest. It's an adventure game. Have you played that, Chuck?
I have not.
So Arcadia Quest is it's kind of an interesting adventure game mix. It's got the kind of standard tropes that you would expect from an adventure game. It has sort of creatures and a map tiles and quests that you need to do. But on top of all that, it has this mechanism where each player is actually their own guild of three heroes. And it's not cooperative, it's competitive. So in addition to killing monsters, you can actually kill each other. And it's great because it's got this really great built-in PvP engine. If your character dies, it's not a big deal because you just respawn right at the beginning of your next turn. It kind of feels like almost like an arena, you know, MOBA-style computer game in board game form.
Sounds a little like Tomb, maybe.
Yeah, it's similar to Tomb, but Tomb is just so unforgiving when you die. And this game, it's like built in. They expect you to your characters to die. There's literally quests for other guilds to kill your guild members.
Nice.
So anyway, I picked up this game. It's got beautiful sculpts and a lot of really great components. And I decided to bring it with me to work because it's got this campaign built in. There's 11 missions and you do 5 in a campaign. So it's got some replayability. It's kind of got this ramping difficulty. There's loot. There's, you know, kind of this leveling up system. And it's got this great competitive sort of foundation. So I brought it to work and actually scheduled some time with 3 non-gamers at work. People who either have played maybe 1 or 2 board games, designer board games, or haven't played them at all. We just dove right in. And the game plays pretty quick, plays in about an hour. Some of the later missions take a little bit longer. But what really sticks out in my mind is that I played this game with 3 non-gamers, and after explaining the relatively simple rules to them, within 15 or 20 minutes, like, there was shouting, there was hooting and hollering over dungeon rolls. People were very excited and really bought into this game that has all these really, I mean, it's got quests and orcs and all this, you know, very RPG, very fantasy game. It seems like a deep game, like you're deep into the nerd with this game, but it's really very very adaptable to a new crowd. I thought that was really cool.
That's awesome.
Actually, I had one guy the next day. We played like on Thursday for lunch, and then the next day's like, are we playing again today?
It's always a good sign.
Yeah, it's good when it gets requested again.
Yeah.
So anyway, Arcadia Quest by Cool Mini or Not. Awesome game, really cool, definitely worth checking out. The minis are really neat. The mechanics are great, and yeah, I'm not a huge fan of PvP games, but a game that has you bounce back so quickly and really doesn't penalize you for being killed is a good way to do it.
Nice. Yeah, so I guess I'll talk about recent acquisition of mine, Imperial Settlers. It's going off the adventure gaming a little bit, but I am Farming Man, so here we go.
Farming Man, what a terrible superhero.
Farming Man! So, it's made by the guy who makes Robinson Crusoe. His name's Polish, so I'm not even going to try and pronounce it. But
Ignacy Trich.
Yes, that. So, he's made a number of games. That, 51st State and many expansions, and Imperial Settlers is his most recent game. I've been loving all of his games, so I picked this one up. And basically, it's a nation-building game, like Tableau style, where you're going to be putting down cards. But it's got interesting, it's got resources, it's got people that you have, meeples that you can use. It's got a little bit of worker placement that you sort of build up as you play these cards. It's a little bit of Tableau, a little bit of like Euro-style worker placement. It's just a really cool combination. The thing I really like about it is it has four different factions. So there's like a neutral deck that you're drawing cards from, and then there's the four factions. You're going to choose one at the beginning of the game, and you have a deck of cards that's your own that only you have access to. So you'll be drawing from both the neutral deck and your own deck throughout the game. So yeah, each faction has kind of their own theme. The Egyptians are like making a ton of gold, and then you trade in that gold for victory points. And the Romans, they get points and more resources just for building stuff, so they just build tons of stuff all over the place. There's the Barbarians, which for once in a Civ game, you get to play the Barbarians instead of them being a neutral faction, which is kind of cool. And they just they don't really have resource generation. They just make a bunch of people and like take other people's resources. So it's very thematic that way.
Nice. That sounds great.
Yeah. So you get kind of a different play experience depending on which faction you're playing with. And I haven't seen much of that in like a card game, that nice mix of everyone's playing from the same deck in the middle, but in addition, they have their own deck. So that was kind of cool.
Yeah, this is one I haven't had a chance yet to try, but I'm really excited to play it. I've played the predecessor once, A New Era, right? It was kind of it's kind of built on the same mechanics,
right?
And I thought the theme was really cool. I like the theme better, I think, in A New Era, the sort of post-apocalyptic theme versus the Civ building theme. But I mean, I've heard that the mechanics are a lot tighter, so I'm very excited to try it out.
Yeah, I actually think New Era, of the two games, New Era is probably the better one. But Imperial Settlers, but New Era, you're all drawing from the same deck. And the only thing probably that Imperial Settlers has over that is that you've got your own deck.
Yeah, games that make an effort to provide the players with a number of different sort of options, to where every time you sit down to play, it's the same core game, but you kind of have a different experience because you're playing a different, in this case, faction. That's actually kind of an adventure game thing in a lot of ways.
Right, like the different classes that you can play as an adventure game.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, very cool. Well, I look forward to trying it. So in this episode of DCA Cast, we're going to be taking a look forward at adventure games in 2015. And we're just going to be talking about a couple each, and we'll probably do this periodically throughout the podcast. But the first one I want to talk about is a one versus many adventure game that was just recently on Kickstarter called Conan. Obviously from the Conan mythos, the Robert E. Howard novels. And this game has a really cool theme. You know, it's really steep. There's a lot of history there. Had a very successful Kickstarter. Over $3 million were pledged to this thing. I'm not included in that. I decided to pass on the KS for a couple of reasons, but primarily I just didn't feel like it was reaching out to me. It does have some pretty unique features for adventure games, though. It's kind of cool. So it's one versus many. So, you know, you have like an overlord player, and then you have a series of heroes. All these heroes are from Conan. And one of the interesting things is that this game has a Euro-style action resolution mechanic, where instead of like you just have a move and an action on your turn, you actually have these gems that are like stamina gems. And you start with a pool of them that are kind of like, that's like your stamina pool. And then you spend them on your turn for various things. So if you want to attack, you spend a stamina gem on your attack action. And that gives you a certain number of dice, which you then roll against the dude or the creature or whatever. And if you miss, you could spend another gem. You could spend gems on movement. You could spend gems on special powers or defending or, you know, all these. There's like six actions that you can do for your character. And then at the end of any given turn, you refresh a subset of those. So you get like five, maybe you have like 10 in your pool, but you get five back every turn. So it's got this kind of neat, like different style of action resolution compared to a lot of other adventure games.
Yeah, it's really interesting. It's almost like action points, but seems like you can use them for more things. Usually when you have action points, it's like you have two or three and you can move or attack, and that's kind of it. But sounds like you can do a lot more with these.
Yeah, it seems like it's very much designed to be kind of a fast system where, you know, a game is less than an hour. The tiles are very large. You only play on one tile, and they, you know, the spaces are very large. They're basically areas instead of just spaces. So spatially, it's a little different. Of course, this is all based on whatever was in the Kickstarter. They might change based on what they actually put together. But anyway, tons of minis, really cool sculpts. It's from a company called Monolith, which is actually a new company, but there's some experienced, there are several experienced designers in there. They just kind of came together to create this game of their dreams, Conan. Very successful, very cool theme. Another thing that's neat about it is the Overlord player has this, I don't remember what it's called, this book that's like their playmat. And in their playmat, they have tiles for each of the kind of characters that they have, like different monsters or guardsmen or whatever. And each of these tiles basically has a number above it. So the Overlord also has these action gems that they can use. And like the lowest tile is at the 1 space. And the highest tile is at like the 9 space. And it costs a number of gems equal to the location of the tile to activate that creature. And then after it's activated, that creature tile gets picked up and moved to the end, becoming the most expensive. So Overlord has to kind of play around with when do I activate certain creatures and how often should I activate this one that's really powerful, but now I'm going to kick him to the end of the line and it's going to be too expensive for me to activate, you know, for another few turns. So definitely a unique take on the adventure game.
Yeah, that's interesting. Like an initiative mechanic almost.
Yeah, mm-hmm, where exactly.
To have someone move twice in a row, you'd have to pay a whole ton in order to do it and set yourself back a little bit. So the next one we're going to look at in 2015 is the Dungeons & Dragons adventure board game, The Temple of Elemental Evil. So they have 3 Dungeons & Dragons adventure board games, and later on in this episode we're going to talk about the very first one they made, Castle Ravenloft. This is the most recent one. It's coming out at the end of April. It's the 4th in the set. It adds a new adventure mode, which is kind of new for the game. The previous 3, each adventure was a one-shot, so you'd start with first-level characters, no treasure, and just enter the dungeon, and you'd complete the mission you were on, and then the game was over, and that was it. And if you wanted to play another session, you'd set up again all of your, you'd maybe choose different characters, you'd wipe all your treasure cards, and start from the beginning, but this time with a different objective. In this one, apparently there's a town tile that you can go to in between adventures, kind of get equipment. They haven't given a lot of details, but it looks like there's going to be more things that you carry over from adventure to adventure, which is kind of exciting because I felt like that was one of the only things that game series was kind of lacking.
It's interesting to me that Dungeons & Dragons board game is as simple as it is from like the campaign perspective, or at least historically. I know they're supposed to be kind of entryways into the role-playing game, but there's these other adventure games that have like these campaigns and stuff that I think are a good middle step. So it's cool that they're going in that direction.
Yeah, I'm excited. And I hope it'll be an option because that's kind of it's also one of the nice things about the game is, you know, I brought it to work the other day and you can just teach people and play a session in like an hour and then you're done. There's no... when you play games like Shadows of Brimstone or Descent, you get the game out to teach it to new people and you're like, oh, everything was, you know, all these cards are set up and put in little bags for the people I was playing with before because they gained all this treasure and they have all these abilities and I got to kind of get all that out and reset it up for, you know, level 1 players. But you don't have to worry about that with these games. It's definitely just kind of a one shot deal. People were wondering kind of with the recently 5th edition of Dungeons & Dragons came out, the most recent edition, and they were wondering if they were going to change any of the mechanics of this game because of that. But it looks like it's sort of going to stay the same mechanics that they had before. They are adding one thing, so the other game they had conditions, you could be slowed or you could be kind of stopped, like webbed in place where you couldn't move. They sort of replace the conditions with just advantage, disadvantage, which is just you get to roll twice and take your highest number or roll twice and take your lowest number, depending on different effects that are put on you.
I'm excited that they're adding advantage and disadvantage because that's probably one of my favorite rules from the 5th edition of D&D.
Mm-hmm.
I heard some interesting... There's a couple interesting threads on Board Game Geek about this game. One is, you know, somebody got to play it at, I think it was... at a Miami game day with Tom Vassell, had a copy of the game for whatever reason. And so this guy posted he'd gotten to play a game And one of the things he had said that was interesting is that a lot of the treasure deck is now gold instead of items, because the gold is used in the town to be able to buy items. And so, like, I wonder how that'll impact your one-off plays, where it's like, okay, I have 16 gold, and that's good, I guess, but I can't, like, do anything with it right now in the game. Or will they have some system where you can trade it in, like, right, ad hoc?
Yeah, and how it'll affect how they're interchangeable. Because these games mm-hmm. are made so that you can take heroes from one game or monsters from another game or tiles. You can mix it all up together because it's all balanced against each other. The monsters have different... They have guides for how to put things together so that it's balanced. You have a good balance of stronger monsters and weaker monsters and things. But you can take any of the heroes from any of the games and throw them somewhere else. Same with the treasure, with the encounters, everything. And yeah, I wonder how that's going to kind of throw that off. With having gold in the treasure deck instead of just straight up items.
Yeah. I think it's admirable that they have all of the different box sets that can be played together, but I was honestly kind of expecting that this new one would be kind of its own standalone product.
Yeah, I was hoping it would be more 5th edition style, since that just came out and they're kind of branding everything with that. I was excited to see a new one. I don't know. I'll have to see. I'll probably pick it up because we have the other one. We both really like it, me and my wife. So we'll probably pick up this new one and check it out.
All right. Well, next, the next one I wanted to talk about is a game called Dungeon Saga Dwarf King's Quest. I'm noticing as I'm looking at my list here that this is like adventure games : adventure games, because all these games have ridiculous names because they're all parts of big series.
Yeah.
So Dungeon Saga Dwarf King's Quest is a new adventure game coming from Mantic. Mantic is a miniature gaming company. They make several board games that are focused really around very well-produced miniatures, although they have a sports game called Dreadball that's apparently doing very well. I know very little about it, but apparently it's quite well-liked. And they have a miniatures game line called Kings of War, which is kind of like Warhammer Fantasy. And Dwarf King's Quest kind of takes place in that universe, but it's at the questing level. So this is an adventure game. This was, again, on Kickstarter last year in August, I believe. And I stupidly passed on this one, and I actually kicked myself pretty much regularly afterwards. But good news, I was actually able to... I contacted Mantic saying, hey, you know, I really want to get in on this game. I'm really interested in it. You know, can I get an invite to your pledge manager? And they actually did send me an invite. They let me hop on there. I mean, they were like, hey, you want to give us some money? Sure, we'll let you give us some money. For nothing in a year, maybe. We'll see what I get. But anyway, so I hopped on the pledge manager, and of course they just released these beta rules. So I downloaded the beta rules. I got out my Reaper Bones minis and some dungeon tiles. I played a couple games against myself. And I have to say, I really like this game. It's very obviously... a love letter to HeroQuest, which is a game that, you know, Chuck, you mentioned you have a history with.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, Dwarf King's Quest, the four main characters are the elf, the barbarian, the dwarf, and the wizard. The exact same four character classes. You know, you're moving through dungeon. It's a one versus many game, but it has this really great tactical combat system in it that's very simple, but it adds facing. And I haven't played an adventure game with facing in it yet, and I really love the addition of facing. I think it makes a huge difference in, even though the system itself is still relatively simple, your tactical options are much more wide open, because you got to figure out how to keep the enemy creatures from, you know, getting in behind you, and how you can get your characters in to, you know, get an extra benefit from being behind the enemy character. So that's pretty cool.
Simple combat system with facing. That's something I'll have to see to believe.
Yeah. I mean, everything else about it is very straightforward. You know, there's not a whole lot of other kind of modifiers or anything like that. So facing is really the complicated part of it. But
gotcha.
That's fair. I mean, facing is a complex rule in and of itself. So it's maybe a little bit of a misnomer for me. But anyway, so this game is coming. It's supposedly coming in August. We'll see if that's actually when it's coming. Their Kickstarter was pretty successful. I think it was just shy of a million. They have a lot of expansions and a lot of great looking figures, and, you know, part of the expansion or part of the Kickstarter, which is really exciting for me, one of the reasons why I was willing to back it at all, is they have an adventure mode. So there's kind of like your normal 9 scenarios or whatever that you can move through that tell a story. And that's like the base of the game. But they have an adventure book that adds like character building. It's all this RPG stuff. You get levels, you get XP. You can actually build your own character, like picking a race and a class. You buy some equipment. You can level up. They have like talent trees. They have all this kind of unique stuff around building your character. And in addition, they have like a dungeon generator, an adventure generator, and all this stuff comes with AI cards so that you can play cooperative, so you don't need an overlord to actually play through the game.
Oh, nice.
Yeah. So it seems like if they actually deliver on everything that they're promising, which, I mean, it's Kickstarter, so who knows? If they deliver everything, I think this is going to be a very successful game. It's kind of a mix of HeroQuest and Warhammer Quest. That's kind of what they seem to be trying to evoke, so... High hopes for that one.
Sounds great. The last game on our list is Star Wars Imperial Assault. This is one that's already come out. If you have experience playing Descent, this is basically Descent with a Star Wars theme on top of it, with rules that are a little more streamlined and just work a little better. If you're not familiar with Descent, this is basically a game where it's many versus one. You've got kind of an overlord who's controlling all the enemies. Each person takes control of a character. You have missions or encounters. You generally play one per session, but then you get to carry over the experience that your characters gain and abilities between them. And in each mission, there's an objective. So you're not just fighting your way through a dungeon. These games don't have as much exploring. It's more just here's the map, here's your objective, now go do it before the overlord, or I forget what the enemy's called in this one, but same idea, before he completes his objective. So it's kind of a race to get your thing done before they get their thing done.
I think it's super creative. I think it's like Empire player.
Nice. One of the cool things I saw with this, having played the Overlord in Descent, is that you alternate turns. Like, one hero goes, and then the Overlord gets to activate some of his monsters, and then another hero goes, and then the Overlord gets to activate some other people. In Descent, it was all of the heroes would go, and then the Overlord could go and activate all of his guys. But in our games, that just ended up being like all the heroes would go and murder all of my stuff, and then monsters usually don't respawn until the end of the overlord phase. So I'd be like, oh great, all my stuff is murdered, I'm gonna do pretty much nothing to you guys, and then my stuff is gonna respawn at the end of the turn. But it sounds like the Empire Lord Master gets to do a lot more stuff in this, kind of gets to interrupt the character's actions, and sounds like it would make it maybe a little more difficult for the characters, but seems interesting. So I haven't played this one. You've played this one, haven't you, Ron?
I have. I played it once. My friend bought it. He was getting ready to start a campaign, which I unfortunately didn't have the time to join, but he wanted to do a learning game with me, so I was able to sit down. We ran through the intro scenario and then the very first mission. It's fun. It's definitely got some differences between it and Descent. So first of all, whoever came up with the idea, whoever was like in the boardroom was like, listen, Descent, but in the Star Wars universe, like give that guy a high five. That guy, that's a great idea. Like
right. It
fits so well.
Yeah.
And Star Wars, I mean, Star Wars is awesome. And like, they did a great job. The theme is just, it's amazing in this game. It's really well put together. But anyway, and the problem with Descent 2, in my opinion, is as the natural GM, I ended up playing the Overlord, and as Chuck was kind of alluding to, playing the Overlord in Descent 2E is not that fun. It's kind of poor. You feel like you're getting beat up on a lot. It doesn't feel like you really, like things are really geared towards you winning. And I always found myself slipping into this role of, well, I'm the DM, I'm supposed to facilitate fun and challenge while letting the heroes progress, which is fine if you go in with that notion, but it's kind of hard when you want to go in there to try to win. But with Imperial Assault, you have your guys are a little bit stronger, and the fact that you get to alternate every turn is brilliant. It's really good mechanic. Makes the game a lot more fun to play. I didn't feel like the story came across that well in Imperial Assault. I felt like it was like you're rebels, and the rebels are doing rebel things, and hashtag just rebel things. Here comes the Empire, and okay, so we shoot each other a bunch. And I've heard that the objectives are a little bit kind of samey. So I've heard mixed things, but I think if you haven't played any of these adventure games, this is a really great entry point for sure, especially if you're a fan of sci-fi, not very common in the adventure game genre.
Right.
So I think that's it for a look forward in 2015. Now, Imperial Assault's on the list, even though it came out in 2014, but no doubt we're going to be getting, it's Fantasy Flight. There are going to be a gamut of expansions.
I think they already have some, like some hero packs or something.
Oh, that's right. Yeah, you can supplement like hero packs. And the other interesting thing about Imperial Assault is it has the skirmish mode where you can play it like a tabletop war game.
Oh, interesting.
I watched, all the characters have points, so you can pay points to put them in your army. And then, you know, you agree upon like 35 points or whatever. And one player plays Empire, one player plays the Rebels. And there's like different scenarios. It's this really well thought out skirmish mode. And I watched a playthrough video of one game, and it's pretty interesting. It seemed like fun. This guy had Darth Vader, and Darth Vader just murdered everyone.
Because that's what he does.
Which seemed appropriate, right? But I'm not sure balance-wise, like, that'd be super fun to play against.
Now, did that mode seem different enough that you could say it's sort of two games in one box?
I definitely think it's two games in one box.
Nice.
It's completely different. You have a different selection of characters available to you. Instead of, like, following a story and worrying about, like, equipment and stuff like that, you're just bringing troops. It feels very much like a skirmish war game, like a squad-based level war game, at least from watching a video. Obviously, I haven't played it, but it definitely seems to me like they're trying to get some organized play appeal out of that, which is always good for Fantasy Flight because they can get more people into stores buying more stuff.
Yep.
Buying stuff.
Which, you know, their stuff is pretty high quality. I love Fantasy, opening a Fantasy Flight game, there's just so many little bits and miniatures and dice, and they're just fun. Just lots of really nice art, and they always do a pretty good job, I feel like.
The second board game I bought was World of Warcraft by Fantasy Flight, which came in a what was then called coffin box, because you could be buried inside of this box. absolutely enormous. Hundreds of miniatures, I'm exaggerating, thousands of tokens, a board that, like, made my table, anyway, a gigantic board, tons of pieces. Like, you're absolutely right, like, opening a Fantasy Flight game is the best, where it's like, if there's not 2,000 cards in this game, I'm going to be disappointed. And I think Descent, or I'm sorry, Imperial Assault really delivers on that. There's tons of minis, there's like an AT-ST in there, which I don't know if you've seen that thing, it's cool, it's really cool. So anyway, so that's it for our look forward in 2015. So the next topic we're going to talk about today is campaigns in adventure games. So we've kind of touched on this a little bit already, and I think we just wanted to kind of talk a little bit just about the different kinds of campaigns that are available in adventure games, and that's kind of a unique feature of an adventure game. The only board game that I can think of that features a campaign of this style that isn't quote-unquote an adventure game is like Risk Legacy, where you play through various playthroughs of Risk, and each time, like, you can make permanent impacts on the world, or you add new army troops and all this other stuff. But essentially, campaigns are long-term games where you sit down and you play through one session, and then you record what happened, and the next session you, like, follow up from that story. There's a new scenario or a new whatever. You play the same character, and you kind of continue this tale. It's definitely an RPG influence on the board game hobby, for sure. It's definitely stemmed from that kind of desire to, like, kind of tell a full story and play a character from session to session. So I kind of wrote down just a few different examples of campaigns, and Chuck, feel free to jump in anytime you want to talk about any of these. So the first one is a structured campaign system. So this is something like Descent or Imperial Assault or Arcadia Quest, game I talked about earlier, where you have a rule book that's like your scenario book, and it's got a list of scenarios, 1 through A, N, and you play through the scenarios in order, or close to an order. Maybe it's branching based on, you know, if you fail a certain mission, you have to go to a different mission. Instead of just going from 1 to 2, maybe go to 1 to 3. And so this is kind of pre-written by the designers of the game. It kind of provides you with this walkthrough of the campaign. There's kind of a pre-written story. Usually the story in these is going to be pretty strong from a pre-written perspective. Like, there's a tale that's going to be told, and your characters are kind of players in that. But the replayability sometimes can suffer because, I mean, in my group, we never even got descent to enough to the table enough to play through much of the scenarios at all. But I can imagine, like, having played through a couple times, once you've done it once or twice, like, you've seen all the scenarios and you kind of want some variety, because in board games, one of the things that's great about playing a board game is you sit down to play and usually there's going to be some random elements that make every experience different.
Yeah. I mean, in Descent, there's basically enough quests that you can play through the entire campaign twice before seeing the same thing. Which is, gosh, it's like 20 sessions probably.
Which is like, what, yeah, 2 years for people like us?
Yeah, but for people that play more regularly, you know, they could definitely get through that. But I think the advantage that these type of campaigns have over the random ones might have the replayability, but these ones really have, you know, when you play a game of Descent, you've got these, not only the story, but the scenarios themselves are just really tight, really well designed. The Overlord and the heroes generally have a pretty even chance of winning because of that tight design. You don't have a lot of swinging one way or the other like you do in a more random game. And you can also have a lot of variety in the things that happen. So Descent, they did a really good job of that. You know, you start out and you're at this, you know, caravan that's been attacked, and then another mission, you're like defending grain from like these goblins that are trying to steal it, and you're trying to like put it in the storehouse before they steal it away. And another mission has you going to a masquerade ball, and you're like unmasking people to try and find this lord, and some of the people are cultists and some of the people are normal people that you're just trying, you don't know what the lord looks like, so you're trying to get all the normal people out of there and just hope that one of them is him.
I remember doing that one, and that one was awesome. Yeah, that's a very unique scenario.
Yeah, there's just so much variety. Like, you're never doing the same thing twice in that. So you get a lot of value there. So you might only have two playthroughs, but those two playthroughs are very tight. Each quest feels great, feels different. And you never have a time where you're just, oh, well, we went to the first room and died. Like, just the dice didn't like us today. It's very much, you know, it's designed, it's structured, so...
Yeah, that's a great point. And of course, with Fantasy Flight games like Descent, they're pumping out expansions that have new quests, new stories. Mm-hmm. You know, they have these small expansions that add like side quests, and then they have these large expansions for Descent that add full new campaigns with all this new stuff. And so there's like, I see that stuff and I like lust after it. I'm like, I want to own all of that stuff. But I'm never going to play any of it,
right.
Unfortunately.
We haven't even finished the base game, let alone those expansions. Yeah. Though I did pick up, they recently released one that turns it into a fully co-op game, which I found interesting. So picked that up. Hopefully be playing it soon.
Oh, yeah. I'm really interested in that one for sure. Anytime. I mean, I'm kind of coming back around to enjoying one versus many. There was a time where I was like, I don't want to play that if it's one versus many. But fully co-op, I do prefer.
Yeah.
So the second type of campaign is what I'm calling open-ended, which is essentially there isn't a rule book or a scenario book, or maybe there is, but it's just random scenarios that aren't really put together in any certain way, and it's kind of up to the players to sort of determine what the order is or what's going to happen, or it's up to randomness to actually determine the scenarios. So an example of this is Myth, which is a very open-ended game. It's extremely sandboxy. If you are not into kind of doing your own interpretations of what you want to do on a given adventure, like definitely, well, you can play the story quests, but the like freeform questing in Myth is very open-ended. And you basically play down a tile and you're like, okay, on this tile, we're going to try a quest, and you draw a quest card. And like you get through a couple tiles and you're like, well, I think this is the last tile in the adventure and now you're done.
And you even choose the tiles too. Like, yeah, right. This one looks good. We're going to start on this one.
Yeah. It's so backwards, and a lot of people really like it. It feels wrong in a way. It's like, okay, I have this box full of components, and I'm cheating. I'm cheating right. So hard at this game right now. But you're not. You're just picking what you want, and then you got to overcome whatever challenge you put down. And they say that the whole idea is that you're sitting around a table telling stories about what happened, which is it's a cool framework. But it's an interesting way to do an open-ended campaign. It's less rewarding in a storytelling perspective, I think. Mm-hmm. mainly because, I mean, yes, you are telling the story, which is kind of cool. Mm-hmm. But in the same time, like, I like being told a story a little bit more, I think.
Yeah, and even the telling the story, I felt a couple of times we played Myth. The story didn't come out the same way it did in other adventure games we've played.
Yeah.
Because it's just, everything seemed a little too random.
For sure, yeah. Well, I mean, talking about random, Shadows of Brimstone, which we talked about last week, is, it's literally just randomness, the game. But in this game, it works, I think, because it's a focused kind of random. Like,
yeah. Yes,
it's random, but you still have to, like, draw a card to determine what the next tile is, and you have to draw cards to see what your threat is. There's a lot of randomness here, as in anything could happen to you, but the game takes the opportunity to still be the storyteller, and so you're still experiencing what's happening instead of kind of making it happen.
And that goes along well with the theme, you know, the Weird West. Anything can happen, and weird stuff happens. So having the randomness there doesn't hurt the story as much, because you kind of expect that, just the absolute randomness from this sort of theme.
And Shadows of Brimstone does come with, I believe it's 10 missions per box, and the missions are pre-written scenarios. Some of them have, like, full tile layouts that tell you exactly what the layout looks like, and I think even some of them have, like, monster placement and stuff, so I'm very interested to try one of those and see how that works with the other randomness that fits into the game. But generally, when you sit down to play, you just roll some dice, and you're like, okay, this is, you roll 2d6, and it's like, oh, this is the mission we rolled, and get started to go. So it's interesting. The next one I've written down, apparently I ran out of ideas, because then the last one is no campaign. There's a lot of adventure games without a campaign. Tomb, Runebound, great game. I recently got this on the table. It's an older game from Fantasy Flight. I think I picked up my copy in 2005. There's a boatload of expansions for it, of which I have zero. Really cool adventure game, tells a story fully encapsulated in itself. So it's kind of like a D&D adventure game, right? Like, yeah. Basically, you start at the beginning of the story, and by the end of the story is over.
Yeah. And the D&D games do have an overarching story. So, like, story-wise, there's a campaign going on, but mechanic-wise, there isn't.
That's an interesting distinction. You're not carrying on a character.
Right. But the story is, I mean, each new thing kind of... If you play them all in a row through the book, there is, you know, you're doing this thing to thwart the main bad guy and then this other thing. So there's definitely this overarching story going on, but.
Gotcha. Yeah. So, I mean, you can name any adventure game that doesn't have a campaign. And I think it works in a lot of these cases where you can sit down and kind of get this encapsulated one time kind of deal and then you're done. It feels faster. Like, so I played Runebound, and in Runebound, you kind of level up. There's no levels, but it feels like you're leveling up, mm-hmm. and because you're kind of boosting your skills and stuff. Mm-hmm. And I will say that it was great to play for 2 hours and increase in power, like, tenfold.
Nice.
Whereas, like, in something like Shadows of Brimstone, you're going to get a little more powerful. It's marginal. It feels good, but it's going to take several sessions for you to really see an improvement in your character.
Right.
And so sometimes you just want to eschew all that other garbage and just become, you know... Become a god in 30 to 60 minutes.
Should be their tagline.
Yeah, Runebound. So the last thing I wanted to bring up was just bad ideas as a campaign type, which is, I just wanted to bring up Dungeon Saga again, actually. One thing that I've already posted feedback about, a lot of other people have posted feedback about, and I really hope Mantic listens, is the campaign system for it, for the base game, is honestly terrible. There's... I think 10 missions or 8 missions, and the heroes basically get 15 hours, quote unquote, basically 15 increments of time to finish the campaign, or the overlord wins. And essentially it costs 1 hour to play a mission. And if you fail the mission, you just have to redo it. And if you fail it again, then you have to redo it again. And each time you retry, you lose another hour. And then, you know, there's a couple problems here. One is, like, forcing players to continually replay a scenario in a one-versus-many situation, I don't know, is ideal.
Right.
If it's, like, you're trying to overcome, like, a pre-written scenario that's, like, this is a challenge and we want to beat it, that's different.
Right.
But if it's just, like, okay, we already know the layout, we know where the monsters are now, like, now we just got to figure out how to do better than the
or
Overlord at this.
Or just roll better this time.
Right. And what's even worse is once you get, let's say you have a really bad streak on the first two missions and you lose 6 or 7 hours, like you now no longer have enough hours to finish this, the whole campaign. Mm-hmm. So you might as well just start over, which is like, oh, that's horrible. That's so bad.
Yeah.
So I'm really hoping they come up with maybe like a, like maybe add a couple missions and do a little branching to where if the heroes fail, this happens, or, you know, or if nothing else, just whoever wins the previous mission gets a bonus in the next mission. That's a simple way to keep the campaign moving forward without having this silly mechanic where the campaign actually ends, because that's not really fun for anyone.
Yeah. Yeah, I think the way Descent does it is, depending on who wins, the next person kind of gets to choose what the adventure is. And the winners get an advantage, experience points or whatever. But I think at some point you count up who's winning and that kind of guides which adventures. So I think if the heroes are winning more, the adventures actually get harder. And if the heroes are losing a lot, then the adventures get easier. So it has like a self-balancing mechanic, which I think is kind of clever.
Yeah, that's smart. I hope they implement something like that in this game, because that's honestly so far my only real complaint.
So our last topic today, we're going to talk about this week's board game. And this week we're talking about the Dungeons & Dragons adventure game, Castle Ravenloft. This is the first Dungeons & Dragons adventure game they made in this series. It came out in 2010, published by Wizards of the Coast. This game is a great entry game for adventure gaming. It plays in about an hour. It's really easy to teach. It's got a lot of... You know, it has cards that show you what your actions are, and basically you just have these cards lined up next to your character, and you just choose one every time you're doing an attack, and everything you need to know to do that action is right there written on the card. So it's really easy to teach people. You just tell them, you know, you get to move, and you get to use one of your actions that's sitting there next to your character. Your hit points are little tokens that you lose as you get hit. Everything's very visual, just very easy to pick up and play this game. Lots of bits. The bits are really pretty. The main mechanic is you've got this big stack of tiles. They're all square. They're the same shape. They've got puzzle edges, so they fit together. And basically, all your characters start on this one tile as you come into the dungeon, and you have some sort of objective. Usually you're looking for a particular tile. I believe the first adventure here, you're looking for like a chapel. You're trying to get this artifact to prevent the evil from spreading out of this castle into the surrounding countryside. So you move to the edge of this tile and you get to explore. And basically you draw a tile. So it's almost like drawing a card from the deck as you explore, except it's literally a deck of tiles that are all the same shape. So it's kind of a neat system. So you just draw a tile, and you put it down, and there's arrows on the tile that shows how it's supposed to fit and stuff. And then, you know, a monster might spawn on that tile, or an event. Encounter, which basically translates as something terrible happens to you. One of those two things will happen on that tile. And then at the end of your turn... any monsters that have spawned during your turn, you get those cards, and each monster has a card that goes with it. That kind of goes alongside your action card. So at the end of your turn, any monsters that you spawned are going to act. And the monsters are as easy as the characters. They literally have if the monster is next to a character, it uses this attack. If it's not, then it tries to move toward the nearest character. If it's, you know, a tile or two away, then it's gonna shoot spines at the character. So it has basically this if then programmatically you can go down the card and basically the monsters just run themselves. And that's another reason it's easy to teach, is because you don't even have to tell people how the monsters work. You can just run the monsters for them if you know the game really well. And same thing with the encounters. They don't need to know how the encounters work or any of that. You can kind of take care of all of that. So really easy game to teach. Couple of the things, every time you kill a monster, you get treasure. We talked about treasure in our last episode. We love the treasure deck. And the treasure deck, it's kind of like good things that happen to you as well. So half of it is like treasure. Half of it is you get a random blessing from the gods and you recover some hit points. or you get experience points. So experience points in this game, you can use them either to cancel an encounter that happens to your party, or if you, and this is the weirdest mechanic and I really don't like it, you can level up to second level if you have 5 experience points and you roll a 20 when you're attacking.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, it's... So, how many times we've rolled a 20 and not had 5 experience points, or been sitting on 7 to 10 experience points and never rolled a 20, or even better, you roll a 20 when you're, like, in that last room and you're about to finish the adventure anyway. And with this game, as we said before, there's no campaign. So, great, I got to level 2, which is a, you know, a boost in power. Your armor class or how hard you are to hit goes up. Your hit points go up. You get to learn a new ability. But that only lasts until the end of the adventure. And then it's done. And the next time you do an adventure, you pick a character over again and they start back at level 1 with none of their treasure or anything.
That's kind of terrible.
Yeah, so the leveling mechanic is really silly. I don't get it, and I don't really... It's not great. It's not great.
Does that carry over to the other games? I feel like I watched a play or something of the other games in the series, and it had a different leveling mechanism.
I don't know, and I'm sure a lot of people have house-ruled that to where you can just spend 5 experience points to level up. I don't know why we haven't. Maybe we did eventually by the time we got to the end. We've played through all of the scenarios in Castle Ravenloft. We've planned for a while to get the other two. So there's Legend of Drizzt and Wrath of Ashardalon that came out after this one. These are all interchangeable games, like we mentioned before. You can take characters from one and play in the quest from another. The other cool thing with the tiles, they've got a bunch of tiles and different bits and artifacts, and people online have actually put together their own scenarios. So there's the different monsters and boss monsters and stuff. And with the combination of all these bits, you can come up with your own adventures, your own setup and your own rules for the adventure to kind of create these unique scenarios, which I think is really kind of cool.
You know, in some other episode, we should talk about community content, because adventure gaming is, like, rife with community content compared to a lot of other types of gaming.
Yeah.
Board games, I mean.
So I think kind of the... So I talked about a lot of the positive points of this game. Again, very great entry-level game. Some of the negatives, that leveling mechanic is awful. It's just not great. Another thing is the... Because it's entry level, it can be pretty random whether you win or lose. It can be very based on kind of just the luck of the die and the luck of the draw in the encounter deck. The abilities that you use, there is some strategy to it, but a lot of times it's pretty obvious when you should use one ability over the other after you've played the game a couple of times. So it doesn't quite get to the point where it plays itself, but it's not the depth that you see in a lot of other games. And, you know, that randomness, we'll play the same exact scenario twice. And one time, the first time we play it, we just get absolutely destroyed. And we'll play it again, and just because of luck of the encounters we get aren't as bad this time, and we just face roll it. And so... You know, there's a lot of randomness there. I like to think when you finally beat that adventure, or, you know, for crisis management games, you feel great about it. In this one, sometimes it's just like, well, you know, we just got lucky that time.
Yeah. You know, I'm remembering, I actually have played this game once. I think it was at PAX in 2009 or 10. And somebody had just gotten, I think it was the Ravenloft one. I think it was the first one. They were super excited. Like, they got it out. They'd gotten a demo. They opened it up. Like, we all sat down. We rolled up our characters. We had, like, I remember having, like, 3 or 4 hit points. Maybe 5 hit points. And, like, 3 tiles in, I died and used, like, our 1 healing surge that we had. And healing surge, like, allows you to pop back up. But if anybody dies, I think you lose, right?
Yeah, so if usually you have a number of healing surges based on the difficulty, so you can do easy, normal, or hard.
Okay.
If it's hard, you have like one, normal's two, and easy is three, I think. And every time one of your characters dies, you use a healing surge, and you basically come back up with like half health.
Yeah.
And if someone dies and it comes around to their turn again and they don't have a healing surge to spend, that's when you lose the game.
Which happened, like, on tile 4. Yeah. And, like, I think this scared me away from the game for I was like, jeez.
Yeah.
It's brutal.
That's the thing. You can, and then you can play that same adventure a second time and just destroy it. But that's fine. You know, for an entry-level game, you're going to see a lot more randomness like that. And it's still a lot of fun. It's got a great sense of exploration. Like Descent, you kind of place out the whole board at the beginning and everyone can see everything that's going on. This has very much that mysterious, you start on that one tile and you're building it as you go. You never know what monster is waiting around the next corner or if that next room is going to be the one you're waiting for or you're looking for. So that's really exciting. I like the exploration aspect of it.
Nice. Yeah, exploration is always really fun. One other cool thing about this game, have you ever played the Dungeon Command games, Chuck?
Nope.
Man, we got to play some games together so we have games that we both play that we can talk about.
Probably.
anyway, Dungeon Command is another series of games by Wizards of the Coast set in the D&D universe. It's kind of cool. It's a miniature skirmish game, and you buy a faction, and your faction is essentially like undead or goblins or whatever. It's usually monsters. And your whole army comes inside of this box. Like, you don't need to go out and buy more dudes, you know, which is, like, your main thing that turns me away from a lot of miniatures games is I feel my wallet shrinking in fear. Mm-hmm. This game's fully contained, and it comes with some dungeon tiles, and you set it all up, and then you do, like, a little miniature skirmish. But what's cool, what I'm getting to here is those games, I have two of those, and they come with cards for Castle Ravenloft. So that you can play the monsters that came in that box in Castle Ravenloft.
Oh, nice.
Which is like such a smart idea, right? There's like this cross-selling. It's like, hey, I got all these minis. Now I can, not only are these minis 100% usable in actual D&D, but I can actually port them over to Ravenloft.
Or any of the other adventure games.
Right. Or any of the D&D adventure games. Yep. Exactly. Yeah. I think the only difference is the Dungeon Command ones are pre-painted and the ones that in Ravenloft are not.
Right.
But yeah, it's kind of cool. It was kind of neat to like bust this out. Like, what is this? Oh, that's kind of cool. They're built so I can play with them in a different game.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I think that about wraps it up for this episode of Dungeon Crawlers Anonymous. Thanks so much for taking the time to listen to our podcast. If you have any feedback you'd like to give us, you can do so here on the blog, or you can email us at dcacast@gmail.com. Be sure to follow us on Twitter at dcacast for information about our upcoming episodes and posts when those episodes go live. And be sure to stay tuned when next week we'll talk about Descent even more. Man, my wife will not touch any game with orcs in it.
Well, Castle Ravenloft doesn't have any orcs. It's just undead and rats.
Perfect.
Yeah.
Those are number two and number three on the list of things she won't pick up games. Undead and rats.